Welcome to the podcast of National Institute of Chemistry. You can relax and pour yourself a favorite drink from a nearby Erlenmeyer flask, Baker, cup, because the days of complex scientific reading are behind us. We are here to provide you with engaging and accessible explanations of the latest discoveries. In this episode, I'm joined by Sara Drvarić-Talian from the Department of Materials Chemistry at the National Institute of Chemistry. We're going to discuss a new way of studying lithium metal batteries while they're working and how this can help us better understand and improve battery performance. Hello, Sara.
Hi.
Thank you so much for accepting the invitation and being here today. We're going to dive into a topic we can hardly imagine our lives today without. These are batteries. But to start, could you please tell us how you first become interested in electrochemistry and material chemistry?
Wow, that's a difficult question. I mean, it was all by chance, more or less. We didn't have that much electrochemistry during my bachelor and master studies. And at the end, I was interested in continuing doing a PhD course. And I just so happened to stumble upon a opening at the National Institute of Chemistry. One of my former professors was the department lead and also invited us to come and see if the projects that are running are something that would be interesting for us. So that's how I applied, basically, with very little electrochemical knowledge, let's say. But I guess it doesn't matter in the end because you learn as you go, right?
Yeah. So what is some topics there that are very intriguing and interesting now today that motivates you to work in this field?
I mean, our department is divided into several laboratories. I work at the laboratory for modern battery systems. So we more or less study batteries. The group is slightly divided. So some of the researchers are working on actually synthesizing new battery materials. So materials that are right now not in batteries as we know it. This can be either organic synthesis, it can be inorganic synthesis, it can be carbon synthesis for let's say anode applications. And then the second part of the group, which is where I'm mostly doing my work, is actually studying why and how these batteries work or more or less not work. So trying to develop new analytical techniques with which we can sort of look into the batteries themselves and figure out what's going on and why we cannot reach the theoretical capabilities that they should have. So this is either developing electrochemical techniques, as is in this paper that we will be discussing today, or other analytical techniques in general. So trying to study which materials are in there and how they're converging between each other, or transport properties, or like there's a whole wide field of things inside how to study batteries that I think the general public doesn't really know about.
Can you remember any part of your past that it was already connected to developing batteries? Or, you know, sometimes we have some of these childhood memories that we did something and you say, oh, I was doing something similar. I wanted to do this while I'm doing today.
Well, I could, technically. No, the thing is that I was always, as a child already, always interested in trying to figure out how or why things work or don't work. I remember I used to disassemble all of the pens that my father used for solving crossword puzzles, right? And I needed to just open every single one of them. Whenever we got a new one, I opened it and I checked there's a spring inside and there's like the ink cartridge inside, and I just disassembled all of them. And my mom used to joke that I always have to check everybody's liver. So it's kind of similar to what I'm doing now, right? I get a battery, and let's say for most people, a battery is just a black box that can work or don't work. But for me, what I'm interested in is what's inside and what's actually happening in terms of electrochemistry and transport and side reactions that are unwanted.
When I was preparing for this podcast, like, I was really thinking about where now we are using all the batteries, because Yeah, usually using, okay, yeah, the normal batteries you put in some remote control or watch. But these are only one-time use batteries, right? And then I was like, oh, but the phone is on the battery, which is rechargeable. And then it's the computer, then it's the e-reader, then it's the power bank. Then it's even this audio recorder that we're using now has the batteries. And then I was like, okay, interesting how you maybe look at the objects or the things that we use, probably very different than us.
Well, let's say that it's very easy for us that work in the battery field to sort of justify the application part of it, right?
Yeah.
I don't really, let's say, I rarely think about the batteries in the devices that I use, technically.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because most of the batteries that are actually on the market are more or less optimized to what they can do. So as a user, you're not really supposed to notice that they're there, right? They should mm-hmm. work and not fail. While the batteries that I work professionally, they usually fail most of the time. So that's kind of the reason why I have to deal with those a bit more.
Uh-huh. So which batteries are that? What is the
chemistry?
Not the chemistry. Let's say what applications are used for the batteries that you want to improve?
Well, all that we can manage, I guess. I mean, it's slightly complicated. Like I said, our group works on also developing new battery chemistries, new battery materials. And as I also said, we mostly work on batteries that don't work as well as they should, right? And the thing is that I kind of feel that right now the market has more or less lithium-ion batteries on it. So these are lithium-ion, either nickel, manganese, cobalt-based cathodes or LFP, so lithium iron phosphate-based cathodes, which are, let's say, most of the rechargeable battery market out there. And I kind of feel that as soon as these new chemistries are going to enter the market, they're going to differentiate in terms of applications. So let's say a certain battery chemistry maybe has better volumetric capacity, but worse gravimetric capacity, let's say. Maybe it's better, this chemistry is better at making very small batteries, and it will be better for applications where small batteries are needed. Some chemistries will be better for applications where, I don't know, soldiers need to carry these batteries with them. Third-based chemistries might be for, I don't know, space applications where you need a battery to really have longevity, right? You send it up and you're not going to be able to fix anything that happens for years, right? So I kind of feel that the whole field is going to really diversify in the next few decades, let's say, in terms of what we are expecting to have.
Is your research more focused on the rechargeable batteries or one-time use batteries?
We work exclusively on rechargeable batteries. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the paper that we're going to yes. discuss today and what you developed is going to be based on rechargeable yes. batteries. So the paper we will discuss is titled Operando Impedance Spectroscopy with Combined Dynamic Measurements and Overvoltage Analysis in Lithium Metal Batteries. It was published in very prestigious journal Nature Communications. Also, we got the expert opinion for this work, which was provided by Professor Patrick Johansson, who is a professor in chemistry at Uppsala University, and he's a director of the large-scale initiative Battery 2030+.
Overall, we see that operando methods are becoming more and more used in the battery field. Impedance spectroscopy, the true workhorse of battery R&D, is here further leveraged by being performed operando. This is truly progress beyond the usual, as it brings a method present in many, many labs around the world to another level and brings insight beyond what has been realized before.
The Professor Patrick Johansson very nicely summed up your work. And we also touched also what was the area of your research a little bit, so rechargeable batteries. And now I want to know your motivations. What was the motivation to conduct this research based on previous research or just the lack of methods?
Okay. maybe let's take a step back. Okay, yeah. Let's say that we have a battery. We assembled this battery, so we technically know what the cathode is and what the anode is and what the separator and electrolyte is. We know what the materials are that we put in. And then we try and see how this battery works. We discharge it, we charge it, we look at the efficiency, we look at the overpotentials, we look at the energy that it produces, yada, yada. And let's say it's not as it should be. We want to reach a certain capacity. It has a certain theoretical capacity, but what we're actually getting out of it is a lot less than what we should. And trying to figure out why that is, electrochemical impedance spectroscopy is one of very powerful, is one of the most powerful, let's say, electrochemical methods that is capable of giving us the information to what, which processes contribute the most to the internal losses. Okay. So inside a battery, we have electrochemical reactions, we have transport of species that need to happen, we have unwanted side reactions. So we can have adsorptions, we can have passivation, we can have breakage of things. There's a very complex thing that's happening inside. And impedance spectroscopy basically gives us a spectrum. It's a spectroscopy. And in that spectrum, what we have is contributions from all the different things that contribute to internal losses. Okay? The thing is that it's very hard. It's non-specific. So we have certain peaks in this spectrum. And we have to, by, let's say, trial and error and doing other experiments, figure out what these peaks actually represent. Okay? And I've been doing impedance spectroscopy since my PhD. And how we usually measure impedance spectroscopy is that you discharge a battery and then you stop. You leave the cell to relax. So the diffusional fronts relax. There is no reaction happening. The cell is in equilibrium. And then you measure impedance spectroscopy in that state. And it gives you a lot of information. I'm not going to deny this. The thing is that as soon as you stop the current and you leave yourself to equilibrate, there are still processes that are happening inside. You can have passivation of your electrodes. You can have other unwanted side reactions. You have relaxation of diffusion fronts. You have several processes that are happening. And because of these processes, what happens is that if you measure at equilibrium, this spectra will be inherently different than if you would be able to measure during actual operation. Okay. So this is kind of the motivation behind the research. Can we measure these impedance spectra while we're actually charging and discharging the battery? Because it will give us better quality information about all of the losses that are happening during battery operation.
Yeah, I think in all areas of science now, we are trying to use the existing methods and make them real time, not yeah. all, but many, also microscopy or some other methods. Because, there is some very valuable information when you see it in certain time, in certain, state. But when you can follow it real time, really see what's going on. You mentioned in the paper operando, also in the title, it's operando. Is operando meaning while working in real time? Is operando term like real time, or is there any difference?
So what this operando term means is that we are measuring this electroanalytical technique. We're using this electroanalytical technique at the same time as we're doing something else. So discharging and charging a battery, let's say.
Okay. Can you explain what's going on while the battery is charging and what is while discharging. It's discharging?
Okay. In a battery, we have two electrodes. We have a cathode and we have an anode. And when we're discharging it, the cathode is the material inside the cathode. So the active material is getting reduced, which means that it's accepting electrons. And on the anode side, the material that's the active material inside the anode, it's getting oxidized, which means that it's giving away electrons. Now, which exact chemical redox reactions these are. It depends on the exact chemistry that we have in the battery.
Mm-hmm. So on this cathode anode, this electrode, you don't want probably material to be on the electrode because then it stops working. Or is there material changing from one to the other?
It sort of depends on the exact battery that we're looking at. So the lithium-ion batteries, which are now, let's say, on the market, what you have is you have a ceramic-based material on the cathode side, into which you can insert lithium ions. And on the anode side, you have a graphite material into which you can also insert lithium ions. So more or less what you're doing is you're taking lithium ions from one side, taking them out, transporting them to the other side, and then putting them in, and then you reverse it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then for other batteries, it can be different. Let's say if you exchange the graphite anode with a lithium metal anode, what you want to do is you want to take the lithium ion. This lithium ion accepts an electron and it produces a lithium metal atom, which then deposits onto the lithium metal anode. While when we are discharging a battery, we actually, one of the lithium atoms inside the lithium metal gives away an electron, a lithium ion is produced, and then this dissolves into the electrolyte.
Mm. And also you're following the lithium atom in this method, how it's depositing, or what are you following with spectroscopy?
Well, more or less what I'm following is transport-related issues. So when we're actually doing this, so for the specific case of lithium metal, when we're stripping lithium away and depositing it back, what happens is that the lithium metal doesn't deposit in like a flat, nice surface as it was before, like in a pristine lithium metal foil. What happens is that when you deposit lithium, this lithium grows into like dendritic structures. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's different types of morphologies. It depends on the current that you're using. It depends on the electrolyte that you're using. But basically, it never deposits in a like a flat, mm-hmm. nice manner. And because of this, these dendritic structures introduce certain constraints. So the lithium ion has to transport through those porous structures to get to the bulk of lithium anode. And we also have an additional constraint because of the fact that lithium metal, when in contact with the electrolyte, forms a special kind of passive layer. It's called a solid electrolyte interface because it has special properties. It's electronically non-conductive, but is ionically conductive. But the problem is that by forming this SEI, we call it, this SEI consumes the electrolyte. So the more dendritic structures you make, all of this surface area is going to react to form this SEI, and you're going to consume more and more of the electrolyte, which means that you're going to change the transport properties more and more. So in essence, with this technique, in this specific battery type, what we're mostly following is transport of lithium ions through the electrolyte, which is changing if we're consuming the electrolyte. We're following the transport of lithium ion through these dendritic structures, which is changing due to how much and what the morphology is. And we're also following the transport of lithium ion through this SEI layer, so the passive layer on the lithium metal, which again depends on the electrolyte, depends on the current, depends on the morphology and a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, it's like, if I give very different example, it's like, you know, cars driving around, how well do they drive? Is there a traffic jam? How they arrive? Where they are parked at the end?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going through a very busy, parking lot, and you're trying to find a space where to park, right? Something, we could use that analogy, yeah. in this
and then
case, yeah.
try to make it the battery more efficient so this car can...
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's a very good analogy, because one of the things that we figured out in this research is that the thing is that, let's say that we're plating lithium and we make these dendritic structures. And then we turn back into discharging a battery, which means that we now have to strip lithium away from this electrode. And the thing is that because we have this high surface area dendritic structure on top of it, we're going to strip away from that first because there's a high surface area of it and it just makes more sense to strip from that. And at a certain point, we stop stripping from that dendritic part and we strip from the bulk lithium underneath it that's still left over. And for a long time, what we thought was that the reason why we're doing this is because we ran out, because of lithium passivation, we ran out of any lithium left over in the dendritic part of the electrode, and we need to pit the bulk lithium. But with this research, what we actually figured out was that it's not really the fact that we run out of lithium in the dendritic portion of the electrode. It's just that it's very hard to get to it. Mm-hmm. So it's the transport is very difficult. So it just energetically makes more sense to just go for the bulk electrode and pit from there. Mm-hmm. So if we take now the car analogy, it basically means that we're circling around a very busy parking lot trying to find a free parking space and then just give up and go to the parking house that's right next to it, right? And then it has a lot of parking spaces available.
Yeah. And how does this work look like in the lab? What do you exactly do? How do you work with the batteries? How do you prepare them?
Okay. So in our lab, we have a lot of glove boxes. So a glove box is a special machine. It's a box that has gloves sticking out of it. And in this glove box, we have and maintain a specific atmosphere, because most of the materials that we work with, most of the materials that batteries are made out of, are sensitive to the outside atmosphere. So they react with oxygen, they react with water, they can also react with nitrogen, let's say. So we keep a very specific atmosphere. It's argon, it has very little oxygen, it has very little water. We dry everything before we put in this glove box. And we handle all of these materials by going into the glove box through the actual gloves that stick out of it. You've probably seen this in movies, right?
Yeah.
And inside this glove box, we actually build battery cells. And this is sort of, I think this is very interesting because I was slightly shocked when I built my first battery. It's a very easy thing to do. You basically just stack three things on top of each other and just wet it a bit. And that's all. You just take one piece of the electrode, so one layer, you put your separator on top, you put a bit of electrolyte, you drop it with a pipette, and then you put the third layer on top, and that's a battery.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow, right? The only thing is that you need to package it in something in order to be able to take it outside of this glove box and actually test it, because most of the testing facilities that we have are outside. So these are potentiostats or galvanostats. So
and
we
outside,
package it.
It's not the environment like it's in the box.
Yeah. So we have to package it. We usually package it in a foil that we call coffee bag foil. Mm-hmm. A reason why we call it a coffee bag foil, because it's actually used for packaging coffee. And it's just a foil, it's called triplex foil, that you're able to heat weld it. So we just heat weld the sides of it and we have a little package inside that has a battery inside, and it has just outside connectors that we put on our crocodile clips of the potentiostat. So I build these batteries inside a atmosphere controlled glove box. I package them, I take them out of the glove box, and then I connect them to a potentiostat and I charge or discharge or measure this impedance spectra or whatever else I want to do. And then I spend a very long time looking at the data and trying to figure out what it means, let's say.
Yes.
Because it's kind of, with impedance spectroscopy, it's a relatively easy technique to measure. Mm-hmm. Most of the potentiostats that we have the capability of measuring this, but it's very hard to interpret the spectra.
Yeah, because you don't get out the image that tells you the story,
yeah,
but
no.
You get out the graph, the spectrum, and you have to figure out which line means what. Do you use also some theoretical calculations or, you know...
A model, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, we haven't in this research, but we have in the past. With impedance spectroscopy, what we use are called transmission line models, which is a... it's technically a very complicated circuit out of resistors and capacitors. So we draw out let's say something out of high school physics, but like severely more complicated. A lot of resistors, a lot of capacitors, and then you can simulate the impedance response of the circuit and compare it to the impedance response that you got out of your cell.
Also today I asked you to bring something with you that represents your work. Can you explain what it is? And the listeners can see the photo online.
Yes. So what I brought was a micro reference wire. In this research, we have used... what was important for this research was that we were able to use three electrode cells. So the battery cell technically wasn't made out of just the cathode and the anode. We also put a very thin reference electrode in between those two. And this reference electrode was made out of gold wire, which is very, very thin. It's a gold wire that is... it has plastic insulation on top of it. It's 50 micrometers thick, so it's like a very thin hair. And we have to put it in a specific place inside the battery cell and connect it. And this actually allows us to differentiate between the contributions of the cathode and the anode to the spectrum. Let's say we can measure the full spectrum, which has both the cathode and the anode losses. But if we use this wire in between, we can say these are the losses from the cathode and these are the losses from the anode.
So you separate, yeah. And very interesting because it's...
Yeah, you
so
barely
thin.
See it.
It's really like a very thin hair.
Yeah, hopefully we'll
and
be able to...
I imagine now the box and the gloves you're working with, and the gloves are quite robust.
Yeah, and technically you have like three gloves on.
Okay.
On because you have
this
to...
This is very thin and then you have to put inside.
Yeah. I mean, it takes some skill. Yeah. Technically you have three gloves on. Maybe I forgot to mention it because you put one pair of gloves on your hands because you want to protect the gloves from any damage. And then when you go in, you also put additional gloves on the inside if you're dealing with liquid electrolytes or whatever, because you don't want to damage them from the inside either. So you have three sets of gloves on your hands when you're doing this.
So the listeners, when they see the photo, the box you see is where the wire is inside. The wire is thin and looking out.
Yeah.
So what were some main results that you got out of it?
I mean, one of the main results is what I was discussing before with the transport and the parking lot and the parking house. But apart from that, I think one of the main thing was actually showing how using this impedance technique operando can be helpful. Because this is not really used a lot in the battery field, and I think that it should be used more. I think that measuring these losses during actual battery operation can further the research a lot more than if just measuring at equilibrium.
It can help researchers a lot to work better, to improve the batteries.
Yes.
So how long does it take to conduct such experiments? Of course, you mentioned the lab. It's not that big deal, but then to figure out...
Well, for this one, I think it took 8-ish years.
Wow.
But it's not like... It was like... there was a lot of side quests, let's say.
Because as usual in science, yes.
I mean, I first measured this, I think, in 2017 something. And I was like, oh, this makes much more sense, right? Because you could actually follow I have like a certain overpotential, like my battery like works well and then it stops working well and then it maybe recovers a bit. And I was like, why do I have these weird bumps inside and curves? And if I could measure, when I measured this operando in penis spectroscopy, I could actually see that there are certain processes that are getting better and certain processes that are getting worse. And I could connect like the variations with the actual processes. And then it took us a long time to actually, so let's say, double check everything and be sure which processes we are talking about, because like impedance spectroscopy is so nonspecific, we actually needed to build the model for the lithium battery, lithium metal anode, and how it works and how these transport issues come into play and how they look like in the spectrum. So we needed to build that model first and validate it. And then we tried to apply it to this research. And then I figured out that I can't, because I have to differentiate between the cathode and the anode. And then it came to actually using this reference electrode. And then we had like a year of issues of how to put this inside the battery and actually have valid spectra that we believe are relevant. And then after all of this was done, we were actually able to measure the final data that was in the paper. So there was a lot of, let's say, side quest, yeah. trying to sort of further the whole field more or less and learn about it before we can apply it. And there was another one, I forgot, there was a third side quest, because we were first using all of this in coin cell type casings. So coin cells are the batteries that we have in our watches. So they're the little button batteries, batteries, right? And we also have the capability of building these button batteries. But when using these button batteries, we actually figured out that specifically for lithium metal battery research, they're not well suited, because they have additional spectra distortions and additional contributions that are not actually coming from the cell that we're interested in. They're coming from the casing, because it's metallic. So there was like a side paper from that as well, right? So we got, let's say, three papers before we actually got to the bottom of this one that we wanted to do in the first place.
Can you remember some limits, some challenges maybe that you had or some other researchers had in this field?
Well, in this one, let's say that it was more not giving up, right? After you have to do so many side things, and I think a lot of times you forget about doing the let's say the original research, right? And something that I was not actually specifically in this lithium metal study, but in another one, what I tried to do at a certain point was just check literature for very old papers on maybe similar phenomena that I was interested in, right? I was like, electrochemistry is not a new field. Like, people have been dealing with, I don't know, lead acid batteries or similar electrochemical systems for years. And maybe in those, they already had these issues and they solved it. So I went and looked through these very old papers and trying to figure out if that can help me further my research. And there's actually a funny story related to these lead acid batteries. So the reason why I was checking that was because I was working on lithium sulfur batteries. And in sulfur, when you reduce sulfur, you're forming lithium sulfide. And lithium sulfide is electronically non-conductive. And the big worry in the field was that if you're forming lithium sulfide, you're actually passivating the electrode by your own doing. And it's not something that would help, right? And then I checked if there are any more known battery types that had these sorts of issues and how they solved it. And I figured out that with lead acid batteries, a similar thing can happen. So you're forming lead sulfate, which is electronically non-conductive, and it can passivate the electrode. And then I was checking how they actually solved this, and I came to this story. So when they first developed lead acid batteries, they saw that lead also deposits in dendritic form as similar to lithium. And to circumvent this, what they did was they put like just a piece of wood in between the two electrodes, because these are big electrodes, right? The lead acid batteries, as we know it, they're huge in comparison to what we're dealing with now. We're trying to miniaturize it to bring into all the devices. And this wood worked for a while, but it started to decompose because you have it in sulfuric acid, and they needed to exchange these wood pieces relatively frequently. And this was, of course, before plastics was invented, more or less. And at a certain point, they were like, okay, what if we put this plastic material in there? It's not going to get degraded by the sulfuric acid. And maybe it's going to like help us not have to exchange this protection a lot. And then they put this plastic in there. And what happened was the battery stopped working. And there was a whole myriad of studies behind it. And what they figured out was that this wood that they put in the sulfuric acid, the sulfuric acid leached out some materials from the wood. It were lignins or other types of materials. And these lignins actually acted as redox mediators, which helped with lead sulfate not passivating the electrode, let's say. So it was more of a like a stroke of luck, right? That they initially started with the wood, but like right now there's a lot of science behind it, because then they took this and like they explored it a lot, like varying the different compounds that they added, the concentration, and etc.
Oh, very interesting. And thank you for reminding us that we have to look back sometimes in the old papers to learn something from there, because many times we are just focusing on the new research, new, let's go further. But sometimes we can learn from the past a lot and apply it in the present. And thank you very much for explaining this battery field and your work that is amazing and can be very contributional to the further development of the batteries. And from now on, I believe that I will look a little bit different at the phone battery when it's 50%, 60%. I will be thinking, how many lithium ions are traveling there? Are they stuck? Are they? So, thank you for being the guest today.
Thank you for the invitation.
That wraps up this episode of Papers Illuminated Szlankarnica. We'll be back next month with more discoveries, more discussions, and another look into the world of cutting-edge research. Until then, stay curious.